Hi, it's Ruth McCauley returning with the second half hour of news from the Decatur area. And as always, we begin with some of the recent funeral notifications that appear in the Decatur Herald and Review. Lenny Ruth Jones, 80, of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, July 16th at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. A service to celebrate Lenny's life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, July 23rd, at the Community Temple COGIC, 759 South Jackson Street, Decatur, 62521. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to that service. Interment will be at Graceland Cemetery. Memorial donations are directed to the Alzheimer's Association or to the Dementia Foundation. Edward J. Snow, 67, of Assumption, died July 19th in St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, July 22nd, in Sites Funeral Home in Assumption. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. tonight, Thursday, July 21st, also at the funeral home. Burial will be in St. Mary's Cemetery in Assumption. Memorial donations may be made in his name to the CAM Youth Ball League, that's C, capital A, capital M. Mrs. Richard M. June Jones Quartz, 97, of League City, Texas, formerly of Mount Zion, died at 1:55 p.m. Sunday, July 17th, in League City, Texas. Funeral service celebrating her life will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, July 23rd, at Mount Calvary Lutheran Church, 2055 South Franklin in Decatur, with the pastor Michael Damery officiating. Visitation will be 1 hour before at the church. Burial will be in Mount Zion Township Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Mount Calvary Lutheran Church. Tanzia Slogan Funeral Service and Care is in charge of the arrangements. William Bill Spencer Bunnell, 88, of Decatur, passed away on Tuesday, July 19th, in his home surrounded by his family. A funeral service to celebrate the life of Bill Bunnell will be at 10 a.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, July 22nd, at Moran and Goble Funeral Home. I'm assuming that's there in Decatur. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. this evening, July 21st, at the funeral home. Burial will be in Macon County Memorial Park, where military honors will be conducted by the Macon County Honor Guard. Memorials may be directed to the family to be designated later. Harriet Miller McGuire, 93, of Decatur, died on July 19th after a brief illness. I'm having trouble finding the funeral information. Okay. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions can be made to the Alan McGuire Memorial Scholarship Fund and Illini Church. Visitation will be held on Friday, that's tomorrow, July 22nd, at Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur from 5 to 7 p.m. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, July 23rd, at Illini Church, Warrensburg, with visitation 1 hour prior to the service. Burial will be in Illini Cemetery in Warrensburg. Pallbearers will be her grandsons and nephews, Jerry Burns, Steve Braden, and Ron Braden. Edward Edward Dale Brackett, 58 of Mount Zion, passed away on Tuesday, July 19th at Decatur Memorial Hospital. A funeral service will be held at noon on Saturday, July 23rd at First Church of the Nazarene in Decatur. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 p.m. on Friday, July 22nd at Brittlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur. Burial will be in Macon County Memorial Park in Harristown. Memorials may be made to Decatur First Church of the Nazarene or the Education Fund for his grandson. We turn now to the editorial pages of the Decatur Herald and Review and pick up an editorial with the headline, Can't Do Congress Takes a Break. And this looks to be an editorial from someplace, the Pittsburgh Post, let me see this, Post Gazette. So the editors are taking a week off here, or a day off, and so we're getting somebody else's view here. Can't Do Congress Takes a Break. Congress has once again let partisan paralysis prevent it from passing the fundamental necessary spending bills that keep the government functioning. They did this as their summer vacation approached. The House's last day was last Thursday. The Senate finished up the next day. They'll be back September 6th when the leaves fall on the tennis courts. They also hope that voters will fail to recall that in January, the House and Senate Republican leadership, notably Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, pledged to pass the spending bills no matter what, and the Democrats promised to play fair too. Both parties seem to have been struck by senior moments regarding their pledges and are instead playing their usual games. There are a dozen or so of these basic appropriation bills, all stuck, mostly in or because of the Senate. They include the military spending bill, a separate military construction and veterans bill where the parties differ on spending to fight the Zika virus, and the Commerce, Justice, and Science bill stuck over gun control. It seems that neither the slaughter in Orlando, Florida, nor the killings in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and St. Paul, Minnesota, followed by the slaying of five police officers in Dallas, and Sunday's murder of three in Baton Rouge, has made any difference in the congressional response to lobbying by the National Rifle Association and the gun industry blocking gun measures. The Senate Democrats are blocking the Defense Appropriations Bill because they are afraid that if they pass it, the Republicans, who want it to please their campaign contributors, will cut the amount by which the defense bill exceeds agreed-upon spending limits from money for domestic issues. It seems remarkable that America's legislators would play these games with vital spending in an election year. If voters see any of these people at the beach or on the golf course during their upcoming 7-week vacation, it might be worth reminding them that they are expected to do what they are paid to do, particularly passing appropriation bills, and what they do or don't do will be reflected by votes for or against them in November. Ooh, okay. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette taking umbrage at the Congress taking a break when nothing's been done. We have a letter to the editor of the Decatur Herald and Review signed by R. Nicholas Burton of Decatur with the headline, Clinton Power Station Should Remain Open. Seemingly lost in the debate concerning the future of the Clinton Nuclear Power Station is the fact that this facility, albeit an expensive one, coming in originally at $4.25 billion for Illinois Power Company, works and works well. This power plant has an excellent safety track record. For nearly 30 years, it has been an abundant source of power with virtually no greenhouse gas emissions, and it has the capacity to generate over 1,000 megawatts of electricity for many years to come. The plant is licensed to operate until 2026, with the potential for a decades-long license renewal thereafter. It is hard to imagine the waste of a valuable asset on a greater scale than shutting down the Clinton nuclear power station. Exelon and the Illinois legislature must get their acts together to keep Clinton online. Again, that's a letter to the editor of the Decatur Herald and Review, signed by R. Nicholas Burton of Decatur. Our next letter is signed by Barbara Minich of Decatur and carries the headline, "Can Mrs. Trump Represent Family Values?" I am going to ask this question of those who have been so concerned with family values and appropriate social behavior in the White House that they have been outraged by Michelle Obama wearing sleeveless dresses that show her bare arms. It's a minor issue on the long list of hypocrisies applied to President Obama, his wife, and even his children. But since the above groups constantly claim there is nothing racist in their attacks on the Obama family, I think it deserves an answer. How or why is it that these groups have shown absolutely no concern that the third wife of the Republican nominee for presidency has a trail of pictures from her modeling career that would have adorned Playday in its heyday? Playboy in its heyday. I am reading that 7 out of 10 evangelicals, the most ardent family values Christians, have no qualms whatsoever about launching this well-endowed and very outgoing model onto the world stage as First Lady of the United States. The issue is much larger than hypocrisy. Anyone concerned about the frequency of terrorist attacks from radical Islamists well knows these terrorists prefer women covered from head to toe in a black costume that shows nothing but their eyes. ISIS recruitment would go through the roof with a First Lady who was the perfect poster child for Western decadence. Ooh, harsh. Signed by, my opinion, harsh. A letter to the editor signed by Barbara Minich of Decatur. We turn now to a letter to the editor of the Decatur Tribune online edition, signed by a Rocky Wilkerson, DPS number 61, Adult Education Manager. It carries the headline, "Update on Need for Adult Education Programs in Our Community." Dear editor, I would like to address a letter that was written to the Decatur Tribune on July 6th regarding compulsory government schooling. The letter appeared to be concerned over the need for adult education in our community. The Decatur Public School Board recently reinstated adult education programs after months of struggles with the budget impasse. I would like to provide an update regarding the need for adult education programs in our community. Decatur Public School serves as a fiscal agent for adult education. Adult education is funded by federal and state grants and local donations. Adult education provides free education classes to people who meet a specific criteria: no high school diploma, unemployed or underemployed, individuals receiving assistance from the government. Students have many reasons for not completing high school. There are situations where life happens, and often bad choices have been made. However, through education comes maturity. We are blessed to have options in our community. Decatur is rich with resources. Decatur Public Schools provides a public education to students and resources to assist them along the way. Adult education is an option for the parents and families of DPS and surrounding areas to complete their educational and employment goals. Adult education providers in the state of Illinois fought hard to keep these programs open and available to assist adult learners. This formula is working and has the outcomes to reflect success. Programs must demonstrate outcomes to receive funding. Adult education programs are held accountable for the money that is provided through grants. More of an interest is being placed on preparing students for the workplace while working on their GED. Economic development will gain a significant stride if all populations are being served and are aligned to move forward. A special interest on the population who need the most assistance, low-income and disadvantaged students. This is often challenging and requires a variety of partnerships from the community. The goal for adult education programs is to transition students to post-secondary and employment. Partnerships such as Workforce Investment Solutions often provide assistance with case management and employment preparation. I have worked in adult education for 25 years. I have seen many changes occur through those years. The most critical is the lack of funding to educate individuals in our community. I believe that developing a pipeline of students with education and employment training can grow our workforce and impact economic development in a positive way. Compulsory education refers to a period of education that is required of persons imposed by law. After reviewing this term, I have come to the conclusion that students who receive adult education services are choosing to do so. This is the way out of poverty and often the road to recovery. Again, that's a letter to the editor of the Decatur Tribune, written by Araki Wilkerson, DPS number 61, Adult Education Manager. We turn now to Paul Osborne's City Beat. Paul is the editor of the Tribune. His columns are usually somewhat more of opinion pieces and sometimes humor pieces, but at any rate, we're going to see what he's talking about today. His column carries the headline, Potential Candidates Should Give a Lot of Thought Before Running for City Council. Several years ago, during the latter part of my first term as mayor, I had to stop by a store to have a repair made on a small piece of equipment. There were two people at the counter I approached. One was a guy who appeared to be making sure the chair he was sitting in didn't escape, because he was holding it down and made no attempt to get out of it and ask what I needed. The other person was a young woman who appeared to be doing all of the work. She was polite, and a few minutes into our conversation about why I was there, she asked, "You're the mayor, aren't you?" I nodded in an affirmative way, and the guy leaning back in the chair straightened up and asked, "You're the mayor?" I said that I was. Then he said something that was classic. "You know, I've been thinking of running for mayor. How much does it pay?" He continued with how much fun he thought it would be to have the mayor's job, and painted a fairly rosy picture of a life of power and privilege by being mayor. "I follow city politics, and it would really be cool to be a part of it," he said, and again asked, "How much does it pay?" He seemed shocked when I told him it paid $8,000 a year, which is far below the poverty line. Anyone who anticipates running for mayor or city council should realize they don't get rich serving in local offices. A city council member receives $4,000 a year. I can't speak for anyone else who has served as mayor or city council member, but I lost far more money than I ever made as mayor. This newspaper could no longer print city legals during the years I served in the office, which was a considerable sum. When you become mayor or city council member, it will have an impact on your job, the time you can spend with family or recreation. Plus, the moment you take the oath of office, you suddenly become brain dead in the eyes of many people who disagree with you or your votes. Smile. Someone once said that anyone who aspires to run for public office should be disqualified on the basis of bad judgment for deciding to run in the first place. I was almost tempted to impart to the young man who asked me about running for mayor some words of wisdom, like, if you're mayor, you'll have to get out of that chair and do something, or I find it strange that someone who is so involved in city politics doesn't even know who the mayor is when he is standing in front of you. Maybe I look younger in person. I certainly encourage people who have a desire to run for city council or other local bodies to do their homework before getting involved and be able to explain why they would be a good choice for councilman or mayor. Well, the years I spent as mayor were extremely busy because I was also running this newspaper at the same time, and stressful. I would not change the experience for anything and was never sorry that I ran for election and re-election and was able to serve. I've always been proud of this community and thought about the decision to run for several years. It was a rich and rewarding experience in many ways, not so rewarding in a few ways. And there is no doubt I became a better editor and person by working to help the community I love. I was honored to be the leader of this city, and I'm still happy to be continuing the fight as a private citizen and newspaper editor to move the city forward and support those with the same mindset. My advice, based on personal experience, is if you are considering running for mayor or city council member, and it's not because you are mad at something this city has done, talk to people you respect and get their input on your ideas and if they will support you if you run. Most of the successful candidates I know followed that formula. If you are someone who just wants to complain about everything, please don't run for office. You're doing a great job where you are at home, and it doesn't take any energy on your part. Ooh, a little bit of a zinger there. Okay, because the next part of his column carries the headline, Three Candidates Have Officially Entered City Council Race. There's presently three candidates who have officially made it known they are going to run for Decatur City Council in next April's election. Park Board Commissioner Chris Riley was the first to announce, and I wrote about his decision in an earlier edition. Chuck Cooley and present Councilman Patrick McDaniel announced their candidacies late last week. Stories about Cooley and McDaniel's official announcements appear elsewhere in the paper. 3 4-year terms on the council will be up for election, and this will be a very important selection of candidates because of the challenges that are facing our city. The common thread that's evident in all three candidates who are asking voters to elect or re-elect, in McDaniel's case, them, is that all have served in public office before seeking election to the council. Riley has served many years on the Decatur Park Board. Cooley served many years on the Macon County Board, and McDaniel continues to serve on the City Council. Seeking election is not something they decided to do because they got ticked off over an issue and decided to do something about it by getting elected to office. I've known the first three candidates for a long time, and I know they have given a lot of thought to making this move towards more public service. I've talked with each of them, along with others they have contacted, before they move forward with their decision to serve or continue to serve in public office. Although many others may announce for city council seats before the filing of nomination petitions takes place toward the end of the year, the first three out of the chute have experience, which is reassuring in a day when few people want to move into the public service arena because of the time and energy commitments. And in a final kind of announcement way, at the end of his column, he reports that Decatur City Councilman Patrick McDaniel is having some yard signs made that ask the public to support our law enforcement officers. Quote, I am also going to start a local campaign asking local citizens to wear blue ribbons to show their support for law enforcement officers, McDaniel told the Decatur Tribune. I plan on handing out such ribbons to the mayor, city council members, and the city manager at last, and it was last Monday night's city council meeting. The public must show their support and pride in our law enforcement officers. We've got time for a few brief notices. The first, Lincoln historian Kim Bauer will present Through the Eyes of a Child, Remembering Abraham Lincoln at 2 p.m. on Sunday, July 24th, in Rock Springs Nature Center. The presentation is a compilation of children's memories of meeting Lincoln, retold in family stories or sometimes recorded by a hometown newspaper. So these are real memories of by children of President Abraham Lincoln. That sounds pretty neat. Totally different. There are free computer classes for low-income persons, which will begin on Monday, August 1st, at the Decatur-Macon County Opportunities Corporation at 1122 East Marietta Street. They will last about 3 hours, starting at 9 a.m., and meet 3 days a week for 4 weeks. Classes include keyboarding, computer basics, using the internet, and Microsoft Excel and Microsoft Word. To enroll, you can call 217-428-0155 starting on Monday. Don't call today, starting on Monday, July 25th. So that's sounds like a brief window to get signed up. July 25th, the course begins. The classes begin on August 1st. And a quick reminder about some events happening later today. The Adult Coloring Night, De-Stress and Express, which is very trendy at the Decatur Public Library in the Staley Room tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. How about Remembering the Farmers Market, 4:30 to 6 p.m. at Strasburg Community Building parking lot, and the Mattoon Bagel Fest, 6 to 10 p.m. in Peterson Park in Mattoon, and the Sweet Corn Festival from 4:30 to 6 p.m. also in the Strasburg Community Building parking lot. And I think those are just a few of the things for this evening. Well, we're out of time for the second half hour of news from the Decatur area. This has been Ruth McCauley reading with you today. I looked forward to it today. Had a good time. Hope you did too. And I look forward to joining up with you next week for more news from the Decatur area. Until then, y'all take care and watch out for that heat advisory that's out there through, gosh, I think it's Saturday. Some nasty weather headed our way. Y'all take care.